Good morning, everybody. Wait till they come in. Give me a minute here. Let's see here. In? Okay. My name is Tom, a grateful alcoholic, and I'm going to unpack what that means. Because it's a, to me, it's like the Mallory, the New Zealand Mallorys. They have 400 different meanings for the word kindness. And I think the Eskimos have 600 different meanings for the word snow. So I think there's room here for the word gratitude to expand a little. And I'll unpack that as we go along. I'd like to take a moment for all those who were affected by the fires. So just a moment of silence, maybe half a minute. Great, thank you. I want to thank all the people who set up this meeting. What a crew. What a crew. I especially want to thank Eric, your secretary. 9 years ago, I spoke at the Women's Club, and we did the same thing. We filled up the van, and we invaded the meeting, and we colonized it. And apparently, there was a guy in the back who really wasn't sure if he belonged here or not. And I guess he heard something. And 9 years later, now he's your secretary. Thank you, Eric. I don't know how he chased me down, but he did and invited me back. And I thought, how cool would it be to replicate that whole. Fill up the van, get in the van, get in the car. And so that's what you see here. We're not from a rehab. yeah. I want to tell you, those people got me here today. Today is probably the first day in almost 2 years that I feel like I have returned back into the body that I used to have. Little over a year and a half ago, I had a cancer diagnosis and had radical neck surgery, and they took out, a whole bunch of metastasized tumors out of my neck, and they cut off a part of my tongue. I had to learn how to speak again. And I walked around like at 145 and had a tube in my neck and a tube in my belly. And I just haven't been myself. Understandable, right? So the enthusiasm that happened to come here today has filled me with life. And I'm going to use that as a theme here. And the theme, if there was a heading of my little pitch that I have to squeeze a lot in 30 minutes, it's going to be called The Blood and the Ink. We have a big book and a 12 by 12. If we did, I'd hold it up and I'd tell you, this is the ink. But you're the blood. You're the blood. And there's a big difference between that. Anybody can learn the ink and pontificate it from here into to sunset. But then I like to say, nice recipe, now cut me a slice. See, all those people that got in the van that came down here, they cut a slice today. Life's about making memories, so get on with the business of creating them. And that's what we did today. It's funny, two of my most powerful, I'm going to go outside of the normal pitch here. Only I it's fair for me to tell you I'm 36 years sober. I got here in 1988, October 16th. And you pack a lot in 36 years, especially if you're a serious 12-step worker. I knock on a lot of doors. I've been active since day one. Two of my most profound spiritual experiences both happened in a hospital, sober. My first one, just to go back a little here, I'm 15, 16 months sober. And I get a job in Los Angeles at the railroad depot in the graveyard shift, hitting tires with the pipes. So when the trucks came, they can successfully go on their route. That was my job, $5.75 an hour. And we all know I could make a lot more money doing other things. And on my way home one morning, I got hit by a drunk driver and ended up in the hospital. And I had knee and shoulder surgery. And during the intake, they asked me about emergency contacts and family members. And I said, no. And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, no, and stop asking me that question. 15 months, you got a lot of attitude. Well, I was there for maybe 4 or 5 days, and nobody showed up. Oh. Was feeling self-pity, and I couldn't wait to get out of there to get, one more time, tear it up, because I'd proven that my life is a piece of shit. On the sixth day, my whole morning meeting showed up, unannounced. Remember, I said the blood in the ink? That's the blood. And I spontaneously started crying in almost like a convulsion type of way. I couldn't stop it. It was overwhelming. And one of the women, old timers in the meeting, she had my head and she was massaging my temples. And another one had my ankles. And an old timer guy, he had his hand on my chest. And I was just bawling. And I'd never cried. And you'll hear why in a minute. And I became a human being that moment. Maybe 32 years old. And they kept continuing to come, and during my exit interview, the surgeon comes in and he starts to give me, the instructions about the rehab for the shoulder and the knee. And he asked me if somebody's picking me up, and I said, I got it covered. He says, I'm a little curious. On your intake, you said that there's no contacts and there's no emergency numbers. But I've been here for a long time, and I don't think I've seen anybody with bringing so many people into this hospital. You sure do have a lot of friends. And that made me feel wonderful. But then he said, what I don't understand is, how come nobody doesn't know your last name? Hey, I'm here to see Tom. Tom, I don't know, but he's a really good friend of mine. I left there a human being, and that was the beginning of my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what that looks like? Oh man, I started going to a lot of sober living houses. My sponsor found out that I was illiterate, and he's a man here that knows him. My first sponsee, or second or third, by the way, is here, 33 years. Greg, thank you, man. He started to teach me how to read and write at the age of 32. Took a Wednesday out of his life every week for almost 2 years, and then I started to go to more meetings, and I started to read and learn a little. And I went through the steps with him. And then one day, I think it was my 3 year sobriety date, he gave me a one-way ticket to India. That's what I said. Whoa. And I ended up, riding a motorcycle across India and getting involved with AA there. And then a sponsee, Greg remembers Louis, a Peruvian sponsee who invited me to be the best man at a tribal wedding on top of Machu Picchu. And I ended up in Nepal, where I got to start the first AA meeting and hang out with all these amazing Tibetan Rinpoches, who, by the way, knew more about the phenomena of Alcoholics Anonymous than anybody I ever met. They understood it from 30,000 feet. They understood the global implications of what this movement has given to humanity. It relieves suffering and nurtures empathy. You know what he told me? He said, go home. You know, it's easy to be spiritual on the mountaintop. You know? Now go try and do it on a 12-step call. And I did. I came back. And when I came back, you know, a whole bunch of things happened. Like I got married and started a business, a couple of them, and started a men's step study meeting at my house that has been running for 20 years. We go through the steps and the traditions. It takes us a full year. And all those guys are still sober. I started an annual meeting in my backyard. It's running 26 years now. A lot of people from LA come to it. It's called Spiritual Madness, and it's a couple of hundred people every October, usually the 19th. And by the way, you're invited. Huge bonfire, like 10 feet high, lots of food, bring a sleeping bag. And then COVID hit, and I started another meeting in my backyard, a meditation sound bowl meeting, and that kind of blew up. So over the course of my sobriety, there's been over 7,000 people in my backyard. Now, how does a guy who got here hitting tires in the Los Angeles Depot rail station end up with 7,000 people in his backyard? What is going on? It's not me. There's nothing to do with ego or me or my persona, nothing. I will say it has to do with spirit. Remember the blood and the ink? I'm going to have to put my glasses on at this one because I hit some notes here. Remember when I told you about the getting in the motorcycle accident? And that was my second spiritual experience. And I said I had nobody to contact and no emergency. So I was born to a prostitute in New York City, 3 months premature, and she dropped me in a bar across from Lenox Hill Hospital. And I went directly into the huge, violent, perverse foster care system because I didn't look good on paper. They thought maybe I was maybe even, you know, not just artistic, but a little on the, I was a drug baby. And I lasted in that environment for about 14 years, about 14, 15 different foster homes. And I don't wish that on anybody. I left there and I learned how to make a living on the streets of New York. And when I got really good at it, I ended up selling drugs at Plato's Retreat and Studio 54. You know, I was upscale, right? Until it got so bad where I was end up selling myself. And that was a long run. It was a long run until I got here on a bicycle with shit in my pants and drug sores on my face, unable to read or write. I mean, this could have been because, you know, being a drug baby, but I had severe learning disabilities. I didn't know what that meant. But I was an outcast. I didn't get here complaining that my life fell apart. I started out that way. You know, a lot of us come here, we need to be rehabilitated. I needed to be habilitated, if there's such a word. Here comes the blood. You think it mattered to anybody, the story I just told you? No. We all know the Yale or Jail, Park Avenue or Park Bench, right? They showed me nothing but love. I am who I am because you took time out of your life so I could have one. I'm no longer illiterate. I've gone to great lengths to learn how to read and write. I've had the privilege of traveling the world. I put this program in front of everything, not because I'm afraid I'm going to drink. And I'm going to explain that in a real quick second. Because it has introduced me to versions of this man that I had no idea existed. And I think the gentleman who took 19 years, where is he? Here he is. Is it? No, it was the guy with the LA shirt. Yeah. He was standing on the outside looking inside of where he was once a patient. And I want to ask you, did you know that version of you even existed that was in the marathon? Yeah. I'm curious, does anybody, would anybody say that you know right now that this version of you existed from the person you dragged into the rooms how many ever years ago? Did you know this version of you existed? I had no idea this version of me existed. And there have been many versions of this guy. As a matter of fact, Alcoholics Anonymous is a wonderful place to come and die, metaphorically speaking. And I have died many deaths here. The good news is the program's not about death. It's designed to succeed in a very mystical, magical, even esoteric way. I spent over 15 years going through Bill Wilson's library and stepping stones upstate New York. And since, education came really late to me in life, so I took off like a rocket. And I started learning about all these great guys that, from Immanuel Kant to Walt Whitman to Herbert Spencer to Jung to William James. And my head was just full. I was taking off like a rocket. And I kept being introduced to this guy I'd never met before, this version of me. That's why I stay here. I don't stay here for the threat of the drink. You have so overwhelmed me with life that that knuckle-dragging Neanderthal is gone. That version of me, that narrative of me that I dragged in the rooms 36 years ago is gone. Now, no one's exempt from the human conditions. I have a lot of problems. Who doesn't? As a matter of fact, I'm still sober now, right? But during COVID, which I'm going to trace back to this cancer, it destroyed, it gutted me. It destroyed my two businesses completely. And because of those businesses and the employees, I got to own a home, and I own that home because of them. So I had to take care of them. And every week I would take them to the grocery store and fill up the shopping cart. And it was bankrupting me. And I actually even thought I was going to lose my home. And then even something more difficult happened. I started losing the best friends of my life. People that I've gotten sober with that I've known for 30 years that I talk to every single day. And I have to tell you, they meant more to me than anything because they were my family, because I didn't have one. And between COVID and losing my dear friends, I started really stressing out. And I got a really bad case of the shingles. And that made the pH in this biology here just right for the cancer to take off. And by the way, all my cancers, all drug and alcohol and hedonistic stuff related. Head and neck, squamous cell carcinoma. And then I got that diagnosis. And I'm in the hospital and I got a tube in my neck, a tube in my belly, and I keep thinking, man, just please take me. I just can't. I had enough suffering in my life. I had a good life. Just please take me. And then I woke up in the hospital room. I got to include you in this, and I'm going to get there in a second. And I found myself in the corner of the room, looking down at myself in the bed. And doctors were coming in and coming out, and I'm going, am I dead? Am I dead? And then I started to get nervous, like, what is going on? And then, like, my nervousness, I woke up back up in the body. And when I woke up, all the pain was gone. All the fear about COVID, my friends dying, all the businesses, everything was gone. And that was my second spiritual experience. I want to tell you a little story about that hospital. The day I checked into UCLA, I go to this morning meeting over at Robertson Center across from the log cabin, 6:45, the day I'm going to go in for surgery. And I got to share. And there was a guy, a newcomer there, and he introduced himself to me. And little did I know, he came to visit me every day at the hospital. And he brought a newcomer with him. He's sitting right over there, Eric. Thank you, Eric. And he's still here. I just had to say that. So, to wrap this thing up, I just want to tell you a little about the magic of my whole experience. That was a lot of notes to hit. I could have wasted this time telling you a lot of ridiculous, crazy war stories that had you fall off your chair in laughter. But that's not who I am. I can go there, especially on the stage in the theater, right? I believe that none of us, just embellish me, you don't have to agree with me. I don't believe anybody gets here because of their past. Despite having four DUIs, my fourth one 3 days after my third in a stolen car. No, that didn't get me here. I believe that we're being pulled into our future. And that's why I asked you about this version of you. Did you know it existed? I didn't know this version of me existed. And if you can agree with me that this, you didn't know this version of you existed, I will bet my sobriety that you're being pulled into your future. I could have missed in being introduced to this guy. And today, because of the cancer, who's to know that the cancer has done for me what Alcoholics Anonymous did? It set me free. I propped up those businesses enough to sell them for 25 cents on the dollar. I got rid of that. I jumped out of the fishbowl and found that I could still breathe. I'm not in the grid anymore. I'm learning everything I can about the metabolic nature of the mitochondria inside of the cell. I'm as healthy as I've ever been in my life. I've thrown myself in with six brand new newcomers who have all lived in my front yard. I surround myself with these people who got me here because I was not this enthusiastic. I needed their support and their love to do this. So I just want to wrap it up by telling you there's a big difference between the blood and the ink. Anybody can pontificate about the history of AA. I happen to have a photograph memory. I can tell you anything or anything about any word on any page. Like the word surrender doesn't exist in any of Bill Wilson's literature. He never wrote that word, right? That Herbert Spencer, well, I can just go on. I don't want to waste any more time about being pontificating. The blood is what's important. Take time out of your life to make sure the person sitting next to you not only has two shoes that match, but has somebody to call when their heart hurts. And take time out of your life to make sure that you're pulling somebody along with you every minute. It says in there that a kind act once in a while is not enough. We have to do it every day. And it says that if you stay on the firing line, you'll be immune from the next drink. And you'll tap into unsuspected inner resources, Charlie, that you didn't know existed. I didn't know I was going to read or write. I didn't know I was going to travel the world. I didn't know I was going to meet amazing artists like MB. I didn't know that I would have all these amazing friends. So I'm having the time of my life, and because I refuse chemo and radiation, they've given me an expiration date. Because you know, head and neck surgery is brutal, and cancer and radiation of head and neck, because four of your five senses are above the neck. So I've decided, you know, that you can take me right now. Because I've been so overpaid. I'm not suffering. Thank you for my life. Is my AA girlfriend, even though she's married.
How lucky am I? All right, we're gonna have a question and answer right now. So take it away, Tom.
Wow, okay. You want to answer some of them?
No. I want to see what's happening.
I'm Tony, I'm an alcoholic. At the end, you teased us with a Herbert Spencer anecdote. What was the thing you were going to share about?
Well, there he's one of many big hitters, right? He was a group, you know, he was inspired by him. Contempt prior to investigation. How many of us walk around with contempt, envy, jealousy, anger, fear? Herbert Spencer's a big hitter. So is Edward Carpenter. So was Aldous Huxley, who's in Pass It On, one of my favorite AA books. He said that Bill Wilson is the greatest modern architect of human behavior the 20th century has ever seen. So I was throwing him in there with a whole bunch. You go to Bill Wilson's house and you find the Upanishads, the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the Old Testament. The New, it's a, you find the it's amazing. I put it on your bucket list. Get to his house. Amazing. Anyone been to Stepping Stones? Yeah, I know you have. Please go. There we go. Next. Yes.
I know the alcoholic.
Yeah.
I'm so touched by your story and your victory to find the truth of who you are. You are poetic and you are spiritual, and I'm wondering what your spiritual program is.
That is the most important question. Oh, yes, I have to repeat the question. She embellished me by telling me that I was poetic and that I was an eyes guy and spiritual and wanted to know, you ready? What is my God connect? Because you notice I haven't said anything about God. Most of you talk a lot about God. I still have trouble talking. You ready? I'm well schooled in just about all the worldly theologies. I really am. I spent a lot of time studying them. I have zero creation belief in any creation mythology, but I love the myths and I love the rituals and I love all of the gods. But I hope that my spirituality is just like the program. It's attraction, not promotion. I don't want to talk about God, and I don't want to sell you on AA. I just want to be an example. And those who know me can maybe vouch that maybe I might be an example. I'm a very, we could say, so I have a picture of my house at the Milky Way, right? And right underneath it is the same identical picture. Why is that? The top one says the Milky Way. And underneath it, it says the Milky Way without Earth. That sets me straight every day. I don't take myself seriously on anything. I've finally lived long enough that I've become nobody. You know what that means? I'm nobody, and I'm grateful for it. I'm more of a human being for not being anyone than I was when I was struggling defending that persona of self. Yeah, so I can yak on. I need a good half day, and I've done some of those seminars on spirituality, and you know, I'm fairly learned in that stuff. But there isn't anything more powerful than one person helping another person. It's 50% of the program. Get sober and what? Absolute must. Bill Wilson said he had to die, that he had to lose his life to find it in the life of another. He also said, right after that, it was a 1954 pitch in Iowa, he said, oh, and did I get drunk on things other than alcohol, right? Alcohol is just a symptom. Drugs are just a symptom. What are the causes and the conditions? You help me unpack all of that. And the great reality of God, as Bill Wilson says, is within. I hope I answered that. Thank you. Yeah, hi. I know, kid you not, and these people came up with me know this, you are all invited. October 19th, usually, you know, people stay, there's enough room for a couple, you know, there are a lot of people. It's been going on for 26 years, it's called Spiritual Madness. And I'm in Ojai. Look me up anytime. My casa is your casa. Because I got here without a home. Literally. Whew. But I'm not my house.
I'm an alcoholic. There's so little written in the big book on the 6 and 7 step. How do you work 6 and 7 step and how do you instruct your sponsor?
Great, great question. So now you're going to know a little more about me. Oh, so the gentleman, thank you. I keep forgetting that. The gentleman asked that the big book is very short on 6 and 7. Actually, it's a couple of paragraphs. That, right? That was written in what year? Okay. And how many years difference between that and the 12 by 12? 13, right? He unpacks the 6 and 7 and the 12 by 12, which is the workbook. And in that book, it's designed to succeed. And it unpacks 6 and 7 better than any Jungian analyst, better than any psychologist, and better than any psychiatrist. It talks about, you know, how we want to, like in 4, like how we want to dominate or be dominated. In 6, it talks about these character defects. What is that? He talks about seven. For me, is the hinge that the whole program changed for me. Step seven, one through six, I learned about addiction and obsession, thinking and low self-esteem, and why I picked bad relationships. And I learned all about the psychology of being a human being. But seven through 12 was the hinge. And in seven, it says, this is when we begin the character development. And that's when you taught me to be a gentleman. So six and seven, I take all of the responses in the 12 by 12. Actually, I'm a fan of the 12 by 12. I'll share a secret with you. My sponsor took the word God out of the steps for me. And he was a very religious man. He just didn't want me to get drunk on God. He wanted me to be convinced that I understood the second step, which is that I was insane and I did insane things. He didn't want me to get God drunk. He said, don't worry, he'll come into the picture. And boy, he did on the 11th step. Still to this day, to answer your question, I still sit at the ocean most mornings at 5 a.m. in the middle of the night and watch the sunrise, the gradation from darkness to light, another spiritual metaphor, right? Because Bill Wilson says in the 11th step, in the 12 by 12, this is a direction. Don't take my word for it. It says, go to the ocean and contemplate its mysteries. In a roundabout way, what I'm talking about is the fourth dimension. Being relieved of the bondage of self, the fourth dimension automatically happens. You don't have to find it. We get here like a sponge. You know how a sponge has all these canals in them like this, right? And when they're filled, the sponge is heavy. Nothing can come in, nothing can come out. But when you wring that sponge, oh, look how light it is. And all of a sudden, all the canals are open. And when they're open, stuff can come in like downloads, inspiration, maybe a godlike consciousness. So I went off on a tangent, but I prefer the 12 by 12. I know the book, big book really well. I was in a fire too, and one of my precious gifts I lost was a signed copy of the first edition of the big book by Bill Wilson. Someone was kind enough to give me another one. Because of Cheryl here, I own one of the largest private archives of Alcoholics Anonymous. And instead of giving it to World Services, we slowly have been giving it to our friends. So yeah, I know the difference between the big book and the 12 by 12, but I prefer the 12 by 12. Thank you. Hi.
Hi. Tom, how did you deal with self-pity when you were going through the cancer and all that stuff, if you had any?
Yeah, I did. Wow. I held self-pity. Yeah, somebody asked me, how did I deal with self-pity when I was going through the cancer? I have a long career and a relationship with self-pity. I turned it into a career. We turn suffering into a career. That's who we are, right? It was really hard. I'm going to be really vulnerable and tell you, because all my dear friends had died, and I really didn't have anyone I could feel vulnerable enough with to tell them how much I was hurting. There is no mother, there's no father, there's no uncles, aunts, sisters, brothers, nobody to pat me on my back to see how far I've gone. So I went deep into self-pity. I wanted to jump out the window at UCLA until I had that experience, almost like an out-of-body experience. And if it wasn't for that, I'd still probably be stuck in self-pity, and I'd probably be doing radiation and chemo. And so, yeah, I mean, who still doesn't struggle with it, right? No one's exempt from the human condition. Actually, I had it easy when I got here on my bicycle with shit in my pants and drug sores on my face. I had one key in my pocket that didn't even go to anything. Yeah, by the way, I'm still collecting stuff. My whole house is full of stuff that I find. I have to get rid of it every day. But like my friend, the artist MB, you know, we love expression. And that's what happens to you here. When you're relieved of the bondage of self, you find this huge expression outside of yourself. Whether you're a musician, a writer, an activist like Devin, a wonderful dancer like Lauren, a brilliant activist and volunteer from every end of the planet. You guys are the most amazing people I've ever met on the planet. I have to tell you, my three businesses were, I found an old fire truck in the trash upstate New York visiting Bill Wilson's house. And 30 years ago, I turned it into the original or organic juice bar and coffee bar long before the whole coffee scene, you know? And then I built a whole bunch of them. And then I also started making alternative fuel, biodiesel, like a lot. And then I became an interventionist, and I've been doing interventions on Wall Street and Washington guys for a long time. An eighth grade dropout with a third grade reading level. Most of my sponsors are doctors, politicians, venture capitalist guys. And so what is going on there? I'm going to tell you, it's not intellectually pontificating. It's loving them. And that's what works here, and that's what heals us. Did that happen?
I'm sorry.
Oh.
Oh. Okay, thank you. Here we go.
Thank you, everybody, for bringing life back to my life.